Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
You know, I just wanted to take that shot, you know. And also, it was a good time. I mean, it was 45 seconds to go. We were down two. You know, if I missed, we could have got another stop. But glad I was able to knock that down. I just try to stay disciplined in my shot, hold my follow through, and it went in.
That's Kevin Durant talking about his big three-point shot in Game 3 of the National Basketball Association Finals. The Golden State Warriors star caught the ball near the top of the key and made the dramatic shot, maybe the most important of KD's career, to give his club a 114-113 lead over the host Cleveland Cavaliers with 45 seconds remaining. The Warriors went on to a 118-113 victory to take a commanding 3-0 lead in the NBA Finals. Golden State can sweep the series and clinch its second title in 3 years with another victory in Cleveland on Friday night. Now, the defending champion Cavaliers had a 113-107 lead in Game 3 with just over 3 minutes left. The Warriors scored the next 11 points, capped by Durant's three-pointer, to move close to an unprecedented achievement, going a perfect 16-0 in the NBA playoffs on the way to winning a championship. Golden State coach Steve Kerr talks about the keys to victory in Game 3, beginning with Kevin Durant.
Obviously, you know, KD made some huge plays down the stretch. I thought Klay's defense on Kyrie was amazing. And overall, it was just an incredibly tough, resilient performance. It wasn't our smartest game that we've played all year, but it was maybe our toughest in terms of our ability to just hang in there.
Golden State's ability to just hang in there foiled another outstanding all-around performance by Cleveland star LeBron James.
Oh, man. Before the series even started, we knew we was dealing with I said it after we won the East Conference Finals, that we're getting ready for a juggernaut. I mean, that's probably the most firepower, you know, I've played in my career. You know, I've played against some great teams, but I don't think no team has had this type of firepower. Even when you're playing well, you got to play A++, you know, because they're going to make runs and they're going to make shots and they got guys that's going to make plays. So, you know, we made enough plays tonight to still win the ball game, but they made a couple more.
LeBron James scored 39 points, grabbed 11 rebounds, and passed for 9 assists in Game 3 of the NBA Finals, while teammate Kyrie Irving scored 38 points. But to quote LeBron, it wasn't enough firepower to beat Golden State, which got 31 points from Kevin Durant, 30 from Klay Thompson, and 26 from Stephen Curry. Once again, the Golden State Warriors will try to win their second NBA title in 3 years on Friday night in Cleveland, Ohio. The Warriors have a 3-0 lead over the Cleveland Cavaliers after winning 118-113 on Wednesday night. Now let's go to the Rocky Mountain state of Colorado, where the U.S. men's national soccer team will host Trinidad and Tobago later Thursday night in a 2018 World Cup qualifying match. At the pregame news conference in Denver, USA coach Bruce Arena had this to say.
We clearly look forward to the match. We've been preparing here in Denver and Salt Lake for about 10, 11 days, and then we're really eager to play a game that counts. So we're looking forward to it. We certainly understand the significance of this game. We firmly believe we have to win the game. I believe our opponent would be glad to walk away with a point and certainly be elated with 3 points. So it'll be a challenging game. I think Trinidad will come in here, be organized, and try to frustrate us and perhaps take advantage of set pieces with their good size. So it's going to be a challenging game, and we look forward to it. Our team's prepared and ready to play.
One American who's ready to play Thursday night is Seattle Sounders striker Clint Dempsey, who is one away from tying Landon Donovan for most career U.S. goals. The 34-year-old Dempsey has scored 56 goals for the U.S. men's national soccer team. It wasn't that long ago that Dempsey's run at the record appeared in jeopardy for health reasons. Clint was diagnosed with a heart condition last year that required him to stop playing while he underwent treatment. Dempsey sat out the second half of 2016, and there were questions whether he would return to the pitch. Coach Bruce Arena talks about Dempsey's special qualities at the news conference in Denver.
As a young player, he had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Not that he doesn't have one now, but just that cocky attitude that I'm good and I can make things happen. And, you know, a lot of players don't have that kind of attitude. And I think Clint has played with a chip on his shoulder, and he's aggressive in and around goal. He's all about scoring goals, you know. I'm not asking him to track back into the other penalty area. And that's what he's been about, and he's been special. You can't question his club career or his international career.
That's Bruce Arena, the head coach of the U.S. men's national soccer team, commenting on veteran American striker Clint Dempsey. It'll be Venezuela versus England in Sunday's final at the FIFA Under-20 World Cup football tournament in South Korea. In semifinal results Thursday, Venezuela beat South American rival Uruguay 4-3 on penalty kicks. The teams played to a one-all draw during regulation and extra time. And in the second semifinal, England defeated Italy 3-1. Two of England's goals came from Liverpool-bound Dominic Solanke. The 19-year-old Solanke is scheduled to officially join Liverpool on July 1st after his Chelsea contract expires. And England's third goal came from another Premier League player, Everton striker Ademola Lookman. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to Italy's goal scorer, Riccardo Orsolini. His early goal in the second minute was his fifth of the tournament, making Riccardo the competition's leading goal scorer. England and Venezuela will both be bidding for their first World Under-20 title on Sunday in Suwon, South Korea. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on sunny side, always on sunny side. Keep on sunny side of life. It'll help us every day. It'll brighten all our ways when we keep on sunny side of life.
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home.
classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me, I'm Heather Maxwell, for Music Time in Africa, every Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. We look forward to your next Music Time in Africa show. Turning to athletics, 67-year-old American Ben Beach made history in April when he completed his 50th consecutive Boston Marathon. Ben holds the record for most consecutive completed Boston Marathons. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2017, let's listen in again to a pre-race phone interview I did with Ben, who says a live radio broadcast got him interested in the race.
Radio is how it started for me, because I was a high school senior, sort of just listening to the radio on the afternoon of the marathon in 1967, and I had just started dabbling in running because I had sort of washed out of the sports I really cared about. And it was a sleeting day, and it just sort of, the whole idea of running 26 miles in the sleet grabbed my sense of the bizarre. And so I decided that day that I wanted to run it, not that the weather was going to be that way, but that was the start of it.
Looking back on your very first Boston Marathon, Ben, in 1968, any special memories?
Well, the things I remember best are, one, riding out to Hopkinton on the bus and listening to the conversations of the other runners. And I knew this was a stretch for me. I'd never run a road race of any sort. And in those days, you did not have to qualify for Boston. So even though I knew I wasn't a star, but boy, this made me really ill at ease to hear these guys talk about their training. And then the finish was just spectacularly exciting. Again, I had not had a whole lot of luck as an athlete, and suddenly here I am. One, I'm able to finish. That was a pleasant surprise. And two, I was finishing in 3:23, which I did not expect to be able to do. I still can't explain it. And so the gazillions of people cheering me on and my name's being announced, and just to have, that just is a memory I'll carry with me to the very end.
In some ways, Ben, you've basically grown up with the Boston Marathon. How has your attitude towards the race changed over the years?
Well, the race has changed quite a bit, although it's in essence the same event, but it went from 900-some runners my first year, and now there will be 29 or 30,000 out there on Monday. And, of course, there were a couple of women the first year. Now there will be 13,000. And, you know, they used to serve beef stew afterwards, and that's gone. So it's different and yet the same. And my attitude is pretty much the same. It's just a wonderful event that brings in tradition and the great city of Boston, and it's a wonderful course, and spectators are great. The volunteers are tremendous. It's a wonderful weekend in Boston built around Patriots Day.
Age catches up to all of us, and I know your times have slowed a bit over the years. But
a bit. Damn. pieces.
But you've also been dealing with kind of a special medical condition. Can you tell our VOA listeners about that?
Yeah, I suspect, like me, they've never heard of it. 15 years ago, suddenly I noticed my left leg was coming through more slowly, and it got more pronounced. So I spent 4 years trying to get a diagnosis. I couldn't find a single runner anywhere in the country who had this problem. And finally, a doctor at George Washington University said it could be dystonia. That's D as in David, Y-S-T-O-N-I-A, which is a movement disorder. And it's can take any number of forms. It can affect your whole body or a particular part of your body. So anyway, they sent me, I was able to get into a clinic at NIH, and the doctors there confirmed that I did have dystonia. They don't know why. And basically what is going on is my brain is sending a signal to my left hamstring that when I want to extend it and take my next stride, it's pulling it back. It's telling the hamstring to contract. And so my stride is just a mess. And the main treatment for dystonia is Botox injections. So they began to give me Botox every 3 or 4 months. And that interferes somewhat with the signal from the brain. So that has helped me. Still, if you watch me run, you'd say the guy's got a serious problem. But at least I can still get out there and do some form of a run. And really, it's amazing that the body is so adaptable that a guy with this problem can still go out there and do this.
You talk about how your body is adaptable. How has your training changed over the past 15 years?
Now, my training has changed dramatically. I used to run a fair amount of mileage, as any marathoner should. So I've cut back. I run 3 days a week, and one of those days is in a stairwell because my leg, when it's going more up instead of out, is not affected as much. And the mileage is very limited. And, maybe I do 15 miles a week instead of 50 or 60. But I try to do about 2 hours of exercise a day, whether it's biking or on a rowing machine or weightlifting, elliptical trainer. I just, a lot of cross training to keep my fitness. It's not the same as putting in the running mileage, but it helps.
Psychologically, Ben, I know some runners talk about those happy endorphins they get when they run, but the streak itself, this incredible streak of consistency running the Boston Marathon, has it helped you maybe off the race course in other aspects of your life?
Well, that's an interesting question. I guess I would hope the answer is yes. I think my personality is probably sort of a keep at it sort of person. And if I like to do something, I want to keep doing it, even if there are obstacles. And so I guess I'm not sure I'm equipped to say it has or has not.
What can you tell us about your life off the course, Ben? Are you retired now?
I'm not retired. A lot of people think I am because I don't go to an office very often. I work part-time for a group called the Partnership for Responsible Growth, which is trying to get Congress to pass a carbon fee to deal with climate change. And I'm writing a man's biography, self-published biography, and I have a few other contracts. So I'm working full-time, but I'm on my own.
You also have a family. What do they think of your streak?
Well, I've been very lucky with my family. I met Carol, my wife, at a race on Beach Drive in Kensington. And so she's been just my number one supporter over the years. And the kids sort of inherited that job, I guess, to be enthusiastic about it, and they have been. And really, they all like sports, and they've jumped in enthusiastically in this effort, and so I'm really lucky there.
That's American distance runner Ben Beach, who completed his record 50th consecutive Boston Marathon on April 17th when that interview was first broadcast on The Voice of America. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Good to be here with you.
The NBA Finals appear to be winding down, maybe. Are they trending, Andrew?
Yes, they are. Crisis in Cleveland, down 0-3. The Cavs really have got to do something or else they are going to get swept. And a lot of what we're seeing now on social media is the two sides. You have the Golden State Warriors fans who are poised for victory, poised to sweep the entire postseason, having not lost a game thus far in the postseason.
Incredible record.
Incredible. And then you have the Cavs fans still trying to hold out hope. So you see things like videos of fans in hardware stores. They're looking for brooms that they want to bring to the game for that sweep. And then you have one person who tweeted out, said, "You can't spell Cleveland Cavaliers without three L's." Now, someone commented on that, said, "But not four L's in Cleveland." And in fact, a lot of what we saw last night after that demoralizing loss, we saw Cavs fans trying to say, "It's okay, we're still going to do this, we're still in it." And in fact, last night in Cleveland, last night, one of the top trending topics was Cavs in seven. So that's how Cleveland fans are approaching this, saying, "We're going to get it done in seven games. Might take us a little while to do it, but we're
still holding out
hope." Still holding out hope. Now, history is against them. No team has ever come back from an 0-3 deficit to win the NBA Finals. But as a lot of people are saying, if any team can do it, it's the Cavs behind LeBron, Kyrie Irving. They're saying that they can get it done. It's an interesting shift, too, in fans. Maybe if you're not a fan of one particular team or the other, I was talking to somebody last night who said he was rooting for the Cavaliers, and now he's rooting for Golden State because he wants to see them sweep and not lose at all in the postseason. So some interesting dynamics at play here as we see this final hopefully play out a little longer. I think all fans would like to see at least Cleveland at least win one game unless Golden State can sweep it.
Andrew, we heard from LeBron James earlier in the show, and LeBron talked about Golden State's firepower. LeBron has played very well in the NBA Finals. I think he's averaging a triple-double, and he's played great, but they don't have the firepower to match Golden State.
Yeah, they got to find that fire somewhere. That's fans are hoping they can pick it up and find it. They don't know where, but find it in time for game four.
Lots of tennis taking place in the French capital, Andrew. Is the French Open trending?
It is, and a name that's trending that, as we talked about yesterday, probably a lot of our listeners wouldn't know this name. I, as an avid tennis fan, did not know this name until very recently. Yelena Ostapenko. She's number 47 in the world. She is going to the French Open Finals. She's the first unseeded player to reach the French Open Finals since 1993, beating Tamea Bjorkstrand of Switzerland today in that semifinal. The battle of the birthday girls, because both Tamea Bjorkstrand and Yelena Ostapenko having birthdays today on June 8th. So not only is it, you know, who would have thought that these two would get this far in the tournament, but who would have thought it would be two players playing in the semifinals on their birthdays, both of them. So a happy birthday for Yelena Ostapenko, less so for Tamea Bjorkstrand. However, Tamea Bjorkstrand, even though she lost, she rises now to number 22 in the world because she got to the semis. And listen to this, for Yelena Ostapenko, she goes from number 47 to number 18. 29 spots that she rises by reaching for the French Open final. If she wins the French Open final, she will be the new world number 12. So really amazing stuff from her. But the fans are just so excited to see somebody so young and so promising and so unexpected in the final. Now, the other side of the draw, you have Karolina Pliskova and Simona Halep are vying to get to the final. They're ranked 3 and 4 in the world. Actually, now I think they're ranked 2 and 3. They bumped over Serena Williams since she's not there to play at the French Open. So it might be a little bit of a mismatch from somebody ranked 47 to somebody ranked either 2 or 3 in the world. But as Yelena Ostapenko has showed, she can beat the best of them and get her way to the final. So really amazing stuff there on the red clay. The men take on the semifinals tomorrow. We'll see Rafael Nadal and Dominic Thiem tomorrow, and then Andy Murray and Stan Wawrinka. So those will be some very good matchups. But those are all high seeds. The women's side, this is the exciting one because we get the low seeds in here. Could have a very big upset on the women's side and a very big first-time French Open champion.
Do you like Rafa to get number 10 in Paris?
I got to go with La Decima. I want to see him get number 10. I think a lot of fans want to see him get to number 10.
VOA's Andrew Palcheski. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny.
And that wraps up the June 8th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Justin Thwaites. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
There has been a spike in violence in one of Africa's poorest and most war-torn countries, the Central African Republic, known as CAR. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs released a report this month saying that the frequency and brutality of attacks against communities have surged to levels last seen in 2014. Entire towns have been emptied, houses burnt down, and women and children brutally killed. The terrifying violence by armed militias in the CAR started in 2012 and intensified when a mostly Muslim rebel group, the Selaka, overthrew President Francois Bozize in 2013. Atrocities committed by the Selaka gave rise to a predominantly Christian group to counter it, the Anti-Balaka, which similarly committed untold human rights abuses. Sectarian attacks by each group against each other and against innocent civilians devastated the country. An accord agreed to in 2015 by the rival militias requiring them to disarm, as well as a presidential election in 2016, raised hope for a new and more peaceful future for the country. But many armed rebels did not disarm, and violence has continued and, as the UN has documented, recently escalated. The security situation in CAR deteriorated last month, leading to more than 300 people killed and over 100,000 displaced. In southeastern CAR, six peacekeepers from MINUSCA, the UN peacekeeping mission in CAR, were killed near the town of Bengasu. In the central town of Bria, violence between rebel groups resulted in thousands of civilians pouring into makeshift camps. The United States is deeply concerned by the recent violence. In a written statement, State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said, "We strongly condemn these acts of violence and the targeted attacks against humanitarian actors, whose sole purpose in the CAR is to provide life-saving support to the population." Spokesperson Nauert wrote that the United States mourns the deaths of the UN peacekeepers as well. The security and support provided by MINUSCA are essential for the CAR to move beyond crisis, she noted. "We commend President Faustin Archange Touadéra and his government for their commitment to justice, the rule of law, and accountability for perpetrators of mass atrocities, including through the creation of the Special Criminal Court," said Ms. Nauert. "The United States fully supports justice and reconciliation, not only as measures for individuals who have suffered, but as essential steps towards building a peaceful and inclusive CAR."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.